Welcome to the Cancer Care Connect workshop. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. During the workshop, you will hear from our panel of expert speakers. We will allow time for questions and comments following the presentation. Instructions will be given at that time. If anyone should require assistance during the workshop, please press star, then zero on your touchtone telephone. As a reminder, this workshop is being recorded. I would like to introduce your moderator for today's workshop, Dr. Carolyn Masner, Senior Director of Education and Training at Cancer Care. Please go ahead.
Well, thank you so much, Bella, and I too would like to welcome everyone to today's Cancer Care Connect Education Workshop, Trends in Oncology and Treatment Planning, a Guide to Getting the Best Care. And this is part one of Life with Cancer, a Guide to Getting the Best Care. And today's program is supported by the Cigna Group, and I really want to thank them for their support of today's program. Now, before I introduce our first speaker, I need to do a few things. One is I just want to let you know that there's over 152 participants on the call today. You come from all over the United States, from both urban, rural, suburban, and frontier communities. And we also have a number of international participants from Germany, Iraq, Philippines, Uganda, and the United Kingdom. So it is a global call as well. And now it is my great pleasure to introduce our first speaker. And our first speaker is Dr. Fernando Santini. And Dr. Santini is a thoracic medical oncologist, assistant attending physician, Memorial Sloan Kettering Cancer Center. And Dr. Santini will be addressing understanding your cancer diagnosis and treatment options, factors that may affect treatment planning, clinical trial opportunities, how research increases treatment options, how your healthcare team may help you address your care, and participating in decisions about your treatment plans, side effect prevention and management. It's my pleasure now to turn this program over to my esteemed colleague, Dr. Santini.
Hi, everyone. Thank you so much for the invitation of speaking here. It's my honor and pleasure. And I think my main conflict of interest that I'm a thoracic oncologist, so some of my explanations might be a little bit biased towards the thoracic oncology, but I try to do like kind of like an overview that can be applicable to most of our tumors. So to jumpstart, this is kind of like what I always like to explain to my patients when I first meet them. After a cancer diagnosis, two things are very important. One is the diagnosis by itself, meaning kind of like what type of cancer and all its characteristics. And the second most important thing is what we call staging, all the tests that the patients undergo, CT scans, PET scans, MRIs, to understand where we are seeing the tumor spots in the body. So this is very important because so you can plan the best treatment, we need to have the more accurate information, the better, as best as possible. Because the treatment plan, it's super related to the accurate information. So with regards to diagnosis, having like a very good pathology, a very good biopsy is very important. And with regards to the staging, all the tests that we do, it's very important to for the plan, for the treatment plan determination. And when we think about the treatment plan, it's easier for us to understand that we have mainly two big groups of treatments. One is what we call local treatments, and the second one is what we call systemic treatments. Local treatments, it's mainly surgery or even radiation. And systemic treatment is a treatment that goes towards like the whole patient's body and will kind of like attack all cancer cells everywhere. So when we think about local treatments, usually this is more for patients that have more a localized disease, like the tumor is only localized where the tumor started. If it's a tumor in the lung, it's only in the lung. If it's a tumor in the breast, it's only in the breast. So for those situations, usually the local treatments are more important. So we need to have like the multidisciplinary team involved from the get-go, either if it's the surgeon or the radiation oncologist. So this is very important. On the other hand, if by any chance the patient has more like advanced disease and we see signs of like other spread to other parts of the body, what we call metastasis, we need to think that the systemic treatment is more important. So some kind of treatment that will go and help the body as a whole. And then it comes like this, what really changed the natural history of most of our tumors nowadays. When we compare all the treatments that we have today from like 20 years ago, we would say that we have like mainly two treatment breakthroughs. One is what everybody knows and hear about is like the immunotherapy, which is nothing more than kind of like a vaccine that will boost our own immune system to kill the tumor. And the other one is kind of like a pill form of therapy. There are several different types. This is mostly called like targeted therapy, a pill that will work specifically on an alteration that we find inside the cancer cell. But for that, we need to go back to the diagnosis part, meaning that having the biopsy done on a good place, having the pathologist, a very like expert pathologist to look at the biopsy sample, and having all the tests done that we need in terms of a lot, sometimes molecular tests, we need to have the molecular sequencing of the test, we need to have special markers on depending on the type of the tumor, so we can best design the treatment plan. So to kind of like wrap up this first part, these two things are very, very, very important. Having the proper diagnosis, meaning the type of the tumor and all the other characteristics that we need to know to better plan the treatment, which can include like molecular testing of the tumor, other IHC markers, other markers in the pathology, so the medical oncologist can best plan the treatment. And the second thing is what we call staging, which is the PET scan, the CT scans, and all the MRIs that we order to better define the staging. And having the proper staging and the proper diagnosis is very important for the treatment determination. And when we think about like patients with more advanced disease and the team starts to plan the treatment, we always think about this as a marathon. Unfortunately, or not fortunately, this is how it is. Most of the advanced tumors, we are still not able to get rid of most of them. But most of them can have a very long-term control. So we need to think about the treatment as a marathon. It's not a run, not a sprint. So it's a marathon. So we need to think about the long run. We have several weapons, several treatments to give. So we need to make the most of every single treatment. So when we think about clinical trials, most of the patients ask, "Oh, but why am I enrolling on this clinical trial? Is this gonna help me or not?" The most important answer is we need to think about the clinical trial as one of line of therapy. Within this marathon course, it's another option, it's another line of therapy. Of course, we are testing the drug, but we are still not, we don't know if the drug is better than the other options, but it could be. So we need to think about the clinical trial as another option of treatment, which is very reasonable, and we should always consider a clinical trial when feasible because it is another option of treatment. And most of the situations, the clinical trial is much better for us to enroll patients and for the patients to participate in the clinical trials. The earlier, the better. So when they are, unfortunately, sometimes they are sick enough. They're so sick that they cannot enroll in the clinical trial. So enrolling on clinical trials, the earlier, the better. There is some question sometimes about clinical trials as the first treatment, like the patient had just had the diagnosis of a possible malignancy, and patients inquire about clinical trials. It is also an opportunity, depending on the type of the cancer, But in most of the situations, sometimes we need to start the treatment as soon as possible. So we go for like the standard of care, the best treatment option. And then every patient with advanced disease, how we design the treatment. We start any treatment, either it's chemotherapy, immunotherapy, or a pill form of therapy. And then we set up another set of scans, either CT scans or PET scans on MRI, to see whether the treatment is helping or not. So we have like 8 weeks or 2 months to see. If the treatment, if the tumors are not worse and the patient is feeling better, it means that the treatment is working, and let's go. So we never change a treatment that's working. And unfortunately, sometimes when if the treatment stops working, and then it's time to think about other treatment strategies, and then we will consider a clinical trial. And changing gears a little bit to the how we can best manage and educate about the side effects. I feel like there's sometimes most of the patients are overwhelmed with the amount of information that we have concerning side effects. I always tend to try to make it a little bit simple. Every treatment has different side effects, but I feel like the patients need to focus on the first most common side effects, the ones that are more likely to affect their normal lives. And then this will need to really make the teaching so accurate that we can fast treat all the side effects. If they have a hint of nausea or any other side effect, they should be able to deal with this. So knowing the most common side effects is much more important than kind of like having all the paperwork about all the possible side effects, which is too much to handle. And another important topic when we speak of side effects, every drug has what we call some side effects of interest, which are some side effects that doesn't happen very often, but when they happen, they are severe. So we need to treat them very early, as soon as the patient manifests any symptom. So knowing about them, it's also very important. For instance, if a drug can cause like an inflammation in the lung, so knowing that if you have a little, like a hint of trouble breathing, you should contact your doctor. So I would like kind of like summarize the side effects, how we can best manage them as like, I tend to make it more simple because this is so overwhelming. So knowing the most common side effects are very important. So knowing how to best deal with them is so important. And also some side effects of interest of every single treatment. So every single treatment has some side effects that may be more like dangerous when they happen. They don't happen that often, but it's very good to know. Because if you have just a hint of them, it's good to like easily and fastly touch base with your treating team so they can best manage that. So that's a little bit of overview of how we can best know about our cancer, how we can best detect, how we can best diagnose, and do the stages so we can best treat the patient. And we should always think about clinical trials. And clinical trials are is nothing more than another option of treatment within the spectrum of all the treatments that the patients would be and would receive towards this marathon. And with regards to the side effects, I tend to try to make it more simple because I feel like the patients are usually overwhelmed with all the teaching about the side effects. So we should focus on what's more prevalent and more important so we can best manage them.
Wow, thank you so much, Dr. Santini. That was just a wonderful presentation, just stellar. And since you're the first speaker, it certainly you set the stage for today's program. So I know there'll be questions for you during the Q&A, so thank you so much. And our next speaker is Dr. Guadalupe Palos, and Dr. Palos is a doctor of public health. She's a master's in social work and an RN, so she's her own healthcare team. And she is a former clinical protocol administration manager, Office of Cancer Survivorship, the University of Texas MD Anderson Cancer Center, author and researcher in healthcare disparities, caregiving, and survivorship. And Dr. Palos will be addressing understanding the role of supportive care, the role of self-advocacy in your oncology care, key questions to ask your healthcare team about quality of life concerns, preparing for telehealth telemedicine appointments, including technology, prepared list of questions, follow-up appointments, and discussion of open notes. It's my pleasure now to turn this program over to my esteemed colleague, Dr. Paulos.
Dr. Messner, thank you for that kind introduction, and good afternoon to all of our audience members. Dr. Santini gave an awesome overview of the importance of being an active member of your healthcare team. He gave us a lot of tips in his discussion, so hopefully you all will take an opportunity to listen to the podcast so you can remind yourself of this information. Basically, what I heard a message from Dr. Santini that says, you have to be an active member, because when you are an active member, it allows you to make informed decisions about your treatment plan, whether or not you're going to participate in clinical trials, and all the other factors that come along with the cancer diagnosis. Today, in cancer care, the focus of treatment is shifting from a disease management to a more patient-centered approach. This means that we're giving greater attention as the patients, we're asking the patients and caregivers to manage or pay more attention to managing their own treatment and medication schedules, to addressing psychosocial and quality of life issues, to building self-advocacy skills, and to find a balance between all the healthcare needs and the person's quality of life. All of us on this call understand the cancer journey is a dynamic experience, which begins with a diagnosis and continues even when transitioning to being a long-term cancer survivor. But there's a few core elements throughout the experience, and I'm just going to go briefly through them. The first one is being open to learning about your cancer, learning about your treatment plan, about the resources, about self-advocacy resources, all of that. It's up to the patient and the family to become educated about these areas. And why? Because there is the hope that this knowledge can lead to improved patient outcomes. The second element is understanding the importance of communications with members of your interdisciplinary healthcare team, especially when you're trying to prepare questions about the different things that you're encountering, the treatment plans, the clinical trials, the side effects, and also how they differ across the trajectory of your illness. So, and then what are some of the ways that you're going to conduct? We're seeing new trends with ways to communicate with our providers. It can be through MyChart, it can be through telemedicine or virtual or Zoom. So it's good to find out and keep aware of all of these things that are changing in healthcare. The third one is knowing the meaning of supportive care. What is the purpose of the interdisciplinary team? Why do you have that? And what is the important role that you as a patient and you as a caregiver will have in this complex experience of cancer? And then the last one, and I believe it's probably the most important one, how to balance your healthcare needs and your quality of life. That's what's important, your quality of life and how you may continue with your own life while you're going through this whole experience. So why is it important to know your team? Well, cancer can be complicated, so that's why you have a lot of different professionals involved in creating the interdisciplinary care team. But there's three goals of the interdisciplinary team. One is to improve communication. You're hearing that word again. Two is to improve coordination. And three is to improve decision-making between the patient, their family, and healthcare professionals. The team comes from different specialties of disciplines, and it can include surgeons, medical oncologists, interns specializing in cardiac or endocrine conditions. Then it also has other members, such as the advanced practitioners, the clinic nurses, the patient navigators, the physical therapists, the pharmacists, the nutritionists, and of course our social workers. Because cancer can be a series of phases or events across the cancer trajectory, the need for supportive care often becomes a critical need. The combination of emotional, physical, and all the other factors impacted by this disease calls for an interdisciplinary team to support the patients, their caregivers, and the families. So there is confusion, though, about the term or concept of supportive care, and it's often used as an umbrella term for palliative care, hospice care, and end-of-life care. And we don't have time to go into all of those differences today, but I want you to know that you have to be clear when they say we're going to provide supportive care. Well, what exactly do you mean by supportive care? So in today's discussion, supportive care refers to the need to receive help, care, and assistance for the needs that a patient must face at any point in their cancer continuum. And when I say patient, kind of in parentheses or kind of alongside of that, is a caregiver and the family. So don't forget about them. So meeting so many different providers, of course, can be confusing and overwhelming. So how do you get to know your team? Well, one of the simplest way that we often forget because we get nervous or don't want to take up the provider's time is just to introduce yourself. You know, have each team member, as they come in, to introduce themselves. And if they forget, then you can always just make a statement, oh, you know, excuse me, I must have missed your name. Can you please give it to me? So that way you don't feel like you're just communicating with a white coat. You're communicating with a person, you know who they are, and you know what they're going to do. Most providers do that, but sometimes the busyness of the clinic helps them to kind of forget that, and then they want to just get to your care, the point that's most important. Another tip I'd like to share with patients and their family members is to ask the providers for a business card. Most times they're going to have one, and it's just good to keep them all together, so that way you'll remember. Maybe you can tie a face with a card if that's what you need to do. And it's vital to ask each team member that works on with you is who to contact in case of emergencies or if you have questions that come up, especially after your visit or during the holidays or the weekends. And that's when most little things happen, right? We all know the holidays and the weekends are perfect times for some type of situation to come up. The next core element to decide is who will be your home team and provide the support during your appointments. So you want to find out, you want to designate someone who's going to be your point person and ahead of time. I've had situations where patients will come in with their family and the mother believes that she's the point person. The brother believes that he's the point person because he's the one that has the medical background, you know, or is familiar. Then, you know, the best friend is the point person. So then you have everybody trying to decide in that room at that moment who the point person is. So try to have a designated individual as the point person before your visits or before your discussions. Remember, the more prepared you are for an appointment, the smoother your visit will be. So prepare your questions or concerns about your diagnosis, treatment, side effects, or the different components of your quality of life before your visit. If a telemedicine visit is planned, well, there's going to be a few other preparations, but it can be done. If you're uncomfortable with the technical aspects, it can be helpful to have a family member or a friend who is comfortable and knowledgeable about using electronic devices, knowing about how to navigate software, and just feels comfortable with that whole situation. It's good for you. What I always suggest on this is find a quiet, private place where you know even the dogs and the cats and the grandchildren or the children need to just kind of leave you alone for a certain amount of time while you have this televisit. So it's good to find that quiet area, decide what it is that you're going to use. Am I going to use the phone? Am I going to use the computer? If I'm going to use the phone, I'm going to have a backup, and that's going to be my iPhone. If I have the iPhone, my backup's going to be my computer. So it's, you're planning and being very strategic about this televisit. So to set up ahead of time is really helpful. Sometimes you will also be asked to prepare paperwork before your visit. Be sure and have all that information filled out. So that way, if any questions come up during the visit, you can, go to the paperwork and give your answers, or you can even upload them like they're asking for a lot of the times. Sometimes we're even asked as patients or caregivers to take vital signs. So you may want to take a blood pressure, a temperature, the heart rate, all of those things like that. So that way you can share this information with your provider who's on the call. It's also very helpful if you notice like a rash or anything that's visual, if you take a picture of it, and again, you can share that with your provider during the virtual visit, or you can put it on my chart under so they will have access to it. So again, at the very end of all this, the virtual visit, review your treatment plan. Review the treatment plan with your provider so that both of you understand what the next steps are. What I find patients a lot of times doing is agree, okay. And it's not till later on that they come back and say, oh, you know, I really couldn't do that, but I didn't want to say anything because, you know, I didn't want to say anything. So it's helpful then to get all of these questions that you may have or any kind of little barriers that may stand in the way of your treatment plan discussed at this point. It'll help you in the long run. And then remember to set up a follow-up appointment. Is it going to be another virtual visit or is it going to be a visit in person? So let's move to self-advocacy skills. Why are these so important when dealing with cancer? This term in cancer care differs from like political advocacy or social causes advocacy. In cancer care, self-advocacy is increasingly required of the patient and their families. In other words, these folks are expected to assume an active role in managing their care. It means that patients and caregivers must actively engage throughout the different phases of the journey so that the best possible outcomes for the patient may be achieved. Self-advocacy shows a willingness to learn, participate, and when needed, to question the care plans expected. So it's good to develop the skills needed for being a self-advocate because in the long run, it will help a person's decision-making because it'll be more informed. So how does one learn these skills? Well, I have a quick analogy that I'd like to share with you. Many of you on this call practice these skills in everyday life. If you go to the grocery store and you note a discrepancy in prices for a particular item, higher or lower cost for the item, you most likely will find an employee or manager to learn about the item and question this discrepancy. And as you're walking along, maybe another shopper has overheard the conversation. So that shopper also wants to find out about the differences and supports, you know, goes along with you. Now you have some team support. The final decision will determine if the higher or lower price will be paid. The lower price improves your outcome of saving money. The higher price means your outcome is less than desirable. In short, this whole scenario symbolizes how someone can stand up for themselves and become a self-advocate. So self-advocacy is a combination of personal characteristics, learned skills, and having support from other folks. So I'd like to just say real quick about quality of life. Everyone can have a different interpretation of quality of life, and that even goes for those of you within your family, those of you with your healthcare providers. So be sure and talk about what does quality of life mean to you. Nowadays, what they're really referring to is a person's overall satisfaction with their life and their sense of well-being. It is important, and it does have an impact on the outcomes that are coming through. So advances in cancer have focused not only on treating the physical aspects, but also the psychosocial, the financial, and the social well-being, such as self-image. So fortunately, cancer programs now offer a multifaceted approach to these factors. So you have so many resources at your fingertips. Don't be afraid to use them. Don't be afraid to ask questions. So there are programs and people to support you as the patient and you as the family members to give support during this time. So Dr. Messner will discuss some of the online programs available, and so will Ms. Monaco. So they'll be able to give some valuable information. So Dr. Messner, I appreciate the time to share my thoughts, and this concludes my remarks.
Oh, thank you so much, Dr. Paulos. That was just a wonderful, just a stellar presentation, lots of information, and indeed, we will be also, in addition to sharing information, we also will be posting any resources that we give out. You'll all be getting a Survey Monkey after the program ends, and in that Survey Monkey will be any of the resources that we mentioned, and then even some. So Survey Monkey is an evaluation of the program, but it also does include all of these references that we may have made reference to during the program or that we think you'd be helpful to have. And our next speaker now is Christina Monaco, and she's an oncology social worker at Cancer Care, and she'll be addressing Cancer Care Street programs and services, and she'll talk about our Cancer Care Helpline and our website as well.
Great. Thank you so much, Dr. Messner, and thank you, Dr. Santini and Dr. Palos, for those very wonderful remarks. As Dr. Messner mentioned, my name is Christina. I'm an oncology social worker here at Cancer Care. So just to give you an overview, Cancer Care is a national nonprofit organization that provides free professional support services and information to help people manage the emotional, practical, and financial challenges of cancer. Our comprehensive services include resource navigation, counseling, support groups, educational workshops, publications, and limited financial assistance. There are many aspects of a cancer diagnosis that could be addressed through psychosocial supportive services, including making informed treatment decisions like we've been talking about, quality of life concerns, clinical trials, and communication with one's medical team or loved ones. So as Dr. Palos just mentioned, patients can play a role in advocating for themselves and their needs, as well as exploring available resources that they can utilize for support. This includes letting providers know when you're struggling with side effects, feelings of worry, or day-to-day challenges. Many hospitals, treatment centers, and nonprofit organizations offer these supportive services as well. Being a member in a support group can also offer the opportunity to speak with others who are going through similar experiences as you are, obtain information, and provide support. Currently, Cancer Care offers several diagnosis-specific support groups online. Those are a message board format, as well as post-treatment groups and caregiver groups for your loved ones. Understanding that there are many different needs of cancer patients and their loved ones, these online support groups aim to reduce feelings of loneliness and anxiety, explore new ways of coping, increase feelings of empowerment, and provide practical information about treatment and resources, in addition to helping to address ways to communicate with a person's medical team and their loved ones. As I mentioned, these online support groups take place using a password-protected message board format, and they're led by professional oncology social workers who offer support and guidance. Groups are typically held for 15 weeks at a time, and group members must register on our website to join. You can register for these online support groups through cancercare.org by selecting our services and then support groups. Once you've done that registration process on our website, members can participate by posting in the groups 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Individuals might also experience practical and financial concerns through one's treatment. So please know that if you are encountering any financial hardships, there are organizations that may be able to help you. Cancer Care's resource navigation offers a short-term, strength-based approach service to both patient and caregivers affected by cancer nationally. A trained specialist will work with the client in connecting them to resources, referrals, and financial assistance. Additionally, Cancer Care offers many educational materials, including publications, webinars, and workshops, all of which are focused on emotional and practical topics related to the cancer diagnosis, treatment, and planning surrounding it. If you are interested in learning more about the support services we offer, I encourage you to call Cancer Care's National Hope Line at 1-800-813-4673 to speak to one of our oncology social workers. At Cancer Care, our social workers are trained in how a cancer diagnosis can impact an individual as well as their loved ones. It has been such a pleasure to be a part of this program, so thank you for your attention, and I will now turn our program back to Dr. Messner.
Oh, thank you so much, Ms. Monaco. That was a wonderful presentation, quite stellar, and lots of resources for our participants. What I'd like to do now is I'm going to ask our speakers to provide takeaways from today's program. So I'm going to start with Dr. Palos first in terms of a takeaway from today's program.
Sure, thank you. I'd like to remind you all of how I opened my discussion. There were core elements, and I'd like to remind you of those core elements of the cancer experience. Be open to learning about your cancer treatment and all the other aspects that are there, because it can help to improve your outcomes with this disease. Understand the importance of communication with the members of your interdisciplinary healthcare team. Do not hesitate in asking questions. We're not too busy. We're not in a hurry. We don't think questions are silly. Ask the questions, because if you don't, then you're not going to learn more about your situation. And also, it's good, and I think this last message is for our patients and our caregivers and even our providers. Make time for self-care, and that means balancing any kind of needs that you may have, whether they be health, social, whatever, financial. Look at those needs and see how they relate to your quality of life, and work on them so they can give you or lead to or contribute to a better quality of life. I really appreciate the time to share this with you all, and hope everyone has a good day.
Oh, thank you so much, Dr. Palos. That was just a wonderful takeaway that you provided. And I'm going to ask then Dr. Santini if you would provide a takeaway from today's program.
Yeah, thank you again for inviting me. And I think to kind of like wrap up and really to give patients empowerment, it's very important for them to understand that they need to make the most of every single encounter with their clinical team. So sometimes it's important before going there, make sure you plan what you want to ask, you plan what you want to understand. Sometimes during the visit, very overwhelming for everybody. So it's good to wait, take a deep breath, let's see what was the takeaway from this visit. And sometimes what I miss is that patients need to understand the long-term plan. Kind of like we always have a plan for the future as well. And it's good for them to understand that it's not only about the next scan. It's not only about how they are going to feel tomorrow. About what's the plan of my treatment overall in 1 year time, in 2 years time. So they can better understand and better have a plan and set up the expectations. Expectations on cancer care are very important, because if you have the wrong expectation, you might be always frustrated. So setting up the expectations, this is very important. And the clinical team is there to help to guide patients for the proper treatment plan and help them setting up their expectations. So they can kind of deal with this, understand how to deal with this, and improve kind of everybody's emotional intelligence to deal with this a very challenging time. And yes, thank you so much.
Oh, thank you so much, Dr. Santini. And Ms. Monaco.
The way is that there are so many tools and services for supporting a person as they navigate, not just the practical aspect of cancer care, but also the stress and emotional impact from cancer diagnosis to treatment and through all those stages. So knowing that you have options and can be an active participant in your treatment can be such an empowering experience. And I really think that Dr. Santini and Dr. Palos said it as well as it possibly could be said.
Oh, thank you so much. These takeaways have been very important for our participants. And now we're going to move on to the Q&A. And I'm going to ask Bella to explain to all of you how to queue up for questions.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, at this time, we will take questions from the web only. You may submit questions by clicking Ask a Question.
So a question for Dr. Santini. Is there any type of cancer that has the most advanced as far as preventing recurrences?
Let's try to answer in these two when we speak of recurrence, we can say that technical best term is that patient that had like a local tumor and he or she underwent like a curative intent treatment. And then we start the surveillance, the follow-up, which could be in scans every 3 months, 4 months, or 6 months, depending on the disease. So what's the risk for these patients that have like local treatments, curative intent treatments, that the tumor can grow back in the future? And how and when and why this happens? Because when they had the surgery or the radiation, there was a microscopic tumor cell there that grew with time, and we could not handle with that. So how we can best reduce the chance of this happening is with all our new treatments in terms of like perioperative or even new radiation techniques. So in the past, most of the tumors we did only surgery or radiation and that's it. And then we started doing the surveillance scans. But now we are including all those new treatments, the immunotherapy, the pyroformal therapy, and the chemotherapy before or after the surgery or radiation to increase the cure rates. So all this knowledge that we started with patients with stage 4, we are translating things to the patients with earlier stage cancers to reduce the risk of recurrence. So whenever you have like, or you heard of, or you're helping somebody with a tumor that's not advanced, yes, we have several new technologies and strategies to apply and to increase the cure rate of these patients as well.
Excellent. Thank you so much. And a question for Ms. Monaco. Who on my healthcare team can I ask for help with financial assistance?
Sure. That's a great question. I know that oftentimes oncologists might be tough to access with the busy schedule, so that's where it comes back to finding people on a team. And so asking a nurse if there is a hospital social worker, a patient navigator, or any resource navigation tools or case management is a great place to start. All that it really takes is kind of identifying one person that you feel comfortable asking questions to, and then they can help lead you in the right direction. Oftentimes it is a hospital social worker that can help connect you with these other resources. And if not, apply on your behalf or make phone calls on your behalf can at least help you to collect these resources and be a support as you work through finding financial assistance.
Excellent. Thank you. Excellent question, excellent response. Dr. Santini, where can I find clinical trials applicable to my diagnosis?
The best web tool to find this is the clinicaltrials.gov, and there are several ways you can input information. You can input like the type of the cancer, and usually it's better to input a little bit more than the type of the cancer. Another like important characteristic of the cancer is the cancer has any biomarker, and there will be a list of possible clinical trials available, and also the sites like the hospital and the city where the clinical trial is available. And also most of like the big cancer centers on their websites, they have their trials that are like available on each site. Important for the patients and caregivers to understand that we don't have all the clinical trials available in all the hospitals and all the sites. So everyone has kind of like some clinical trials available. So this is also a good source, the kind of like the hospitals that you have close to you to understand which kind of like and what type of clinical trials they have available.
And Dr. Santini, can you discuss the difference between supportive care and palliative care?
That's a very good question. There is a big discussion, and this is super important about like palliative care, and but we need to understand that like this is basic medicine. Every clinical provider and every doctor, nurse, we should be doing palliative care from the first visit. You don't need to go to a doctor that expert. You cannot rely 100% on everybody to. You should help the patient from the get-go. So you need to help to address the symptoms. So you don't need to send them to a palliative care doctor to help him treating his nausea and to help him treating his, their anxiety. So it's very important to know that your team also is delivering like a palliative care, which is treating patient symptoms and helping to best deal and cope with all this disease journey. There are teams that are experts on treating symptoms, and which is important because there are some symptoms that are very hard to treat. So they are the expert on treating these symptoms. And this is kind of like all the supportive care group. And depending on which hostel are you treating, they kind of like are mixed. So the most important thing is like be very close to your primary treating team. They are the ones that are best, that can best help you. And if needed, they will connect you with the supportive care team or the host or the palliative care team, depending on where you are treated, to best help you to manage all your symptoms and to help you to guide within the cancer journey.
Thank you so much. And just to remind everyone that next week is part two of this series. It's on April 23rd, and it's understanding the cost of care and your healthcare coverage. So it's just a three-part series. There'll be another one as well. Also, I have another question for Dr. Santini. Who can I talk to about filling out an advance directive? Are they only applicable for health care decisions?
You should, kind of like anybody on your treating team should be open to have this discussion and help you to streamline either on the both on the decision and how to set this up on your medical chart so everybody can see that. Yes.
Excellent. Thank you. And also from Ms. Monaco, now how do I join an online support group?
Sure. And actually, before I answer that question, I wanted to just quickly jump in to give a little bit more clinical trial support as well, just to let people know that Cancer Care does partner with a website called mytrialist.org that has a lot of information about clinical trials in your area. And it also has an area on their website for questions that you can ask your doctor. And so that could be a supportive website as well for accessing clinical trials and also preparing for those conversations. So just wanted to kind of put that in there. And then in terms of getting connected with a support group, so I mentioned Cancer Care's online support groups, and those you register for through our website, going into our services, selecting support groups, and then there are diagnosis-specific support groups, or even relationship-specific support groups if you're a loved one. We do have support groups for spouses and young adults. But in terms of finding a support group in your area, that's something else that you could ask a hospital social worker. Oftentimes, community centers or hospitals themselves have in-person or Zoom support groups. So if that's something that you're looking for, that could be a helpful place to ask. Starting with the hospital and then looking around at other places in your community. So I think those would be good stepping stones.
And another question for you, Ms. Monaco. I do not have any family members living close by who are able to take a good deal of time off to help deal with my medical doctors and provide transportation. Is there someone who can help?
Mm-hmm. So, definitely. This is kind of a time when I would encourage even calling us at Cancer Care to help you find other resources. Our financial assistance program can help with the cost of transportation if you're not able to find somebody in your area or a family member to drive you back and forth. We can help, you know, support financially in terms of paying for a cab or paying for public transportation. But otherwise, kind of going back to finding one person that you do feel you can trust, asking a hospital social worker if there are any organizations in the area. Sometimes there are volunteer services for people who might be able to help. I know that not having family and friends around can be a distressing part of this experience. Now with telehealth, there are so many ways that long-distance caregivers can be involved, but it can really be difficult when it comes to those more practical things like transportation. So reaching out, asking for resources, looking into financial assistance are all ways you can get connected.
Oh, thank you so much. And for Dr. Santini, my religious beliefs affect my treatment and medication options. How can I express this to my doctor? It seems like she has already made the decision for me, but I want to follow my faith.
That's a very good question. I think somebody alluded, I forgot who said that, but it's very important to be very transparent and honest with the doctor, with the team. So some patients, I won't say this or that because they might be upset or not. I don't think so. I think it's like the more transparent, the better. Sometimes some physicians, they have a different approach. Everybody's different. So some do share a little bit more the thought process than others. Some decisions, it's just because they are a part of the treatment plan. So just ask your doctor, like, what's the thought process? What are the options? What's the treatment plan? So, and be honest about, like, your beliefs. And then sometimes if he understands what your concerns and what are your expectations, they will be able to guide you through and explain what's behind the thought process. So both sometimes may even change their minds. So which I think the more transparent and the more honest discussion, the better.
Thank you. And another question for Dr. Santini. I just had a lumpectomy and don't know what the rest of my treatment plan will be. I am age 75 and was told by my surgeon that she doesn't recommend radiation for those who are 70 plus. What are your thoughts on this? I have diagnosis of invasive lobular carcinoma stage 1, invasive carcinoma in situ, masses in the right breast. I also have ER positive, PR positive, and HER2 positive negative. My plan may include chemotherapy based on oncotype score and will definitely include hormone therapy. If you could comment on this in a general way, that might be very helpful.
Yeah, in a general way, this is what we were discussing about a situation where you have a local tumor and you have a local treatment, which was surgery. And now we are trying to build a plan of systemic treatments that will go after the surgery with the goal to reduce the risk of the cancer coming back. And the risk of the cancer coming back can be at any place in the body or even in the breast. So there are all these strategies. And all these strategies are trying to increase the cure rate. And this depends on the tumor characteristics, as you said, about the lobular tumor and the ER, the PR or the HER2 status, whether you are a candidate for any oral therapy or chemotherapy, and or even like a surgery, a radiation to give a little bit of more local control to the breast. And that depends a lot on like the type of surgery that you did. So again, a discussion with, honest discussion with the surgeon and the medical oncologist. And if you have any concerns about doing radiation or not, just ask them, how about, can I have an opinion about like the radiation oncologist as well? So you can feel more confident with their decision.
Excellent. Well, I want to thank all our speakers. You have been phenomenal. It's just been an amazing call today. And although we've done this program before, we've never had such really great questions from our participants and really such a great faculty on the program today. So I want to thank both our speakers, but I also want to thank our participants also for asking such great questions. But I do want to make a few comments. Because there were so many of you on the call today, we couldn't take everyone's question. And so with that in mind, I just want to go over a few things with you. For those of you who got to ask a question, please, you've learned a lot on today's program. So please take what you've learned and go back to your treating healthcare team with what you've learned and ask your question of them. Because remember, they know you the best. And you'll be able to ask your question in a more informed way. And for those of you who are still in queue to ask a question and didn't get to ask your question, again, go to your healthcare team, because remember, they have all your records, and then they'll be able to actually address your question. And ask your questions as often as you need to, as frequently as you need to, until you understand an answer. And you also can seek a second opinion if you feel a need to do that as well. And the last thing I want to say is, first of all, we don't want anyone to leave this call feeling that you're alone. You're now part of a community of support, and you have the phone numbers for Cancer Care and all the other resources we're going to send you in the SurveyMonkey evaluation. But also, remember that it seems that evenings, weekends, and holidays are difficult times for people to reach their healthcare team. During the day, you usually can, but evenings, weekends, and holidays aren't so easy. So as we're approaching various holidays coming up, we want to be sure that you ask your healthcare team, who do you call? Who's on call? Evenings, weekends, and holidays. Again, I want to thank you all for your participation today, and I want to wish you all a very fine day. Thank you all.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for your participation. This concludes the workshop, and you may now disconnect. Everyone, have a great day.